What up, and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Bengals podcast. I'm James Erpine. It is great to be with you on a Wednesday. Joe Goodberry of The Athletic coming up in about 30 seconds on Twitter at James Erpine at Locked On Bengals. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever you get your podcasts. It's great to be with you. Bengals start preparing today for the Cleveland Browns as the coaches worked on the game plan yesterday. Today, the players return for practice, and there's a lot to dive into. Let's welcome in Joe Goodberry of The Athletic. He's on Twitter at Joe Goodberry. He's on with us now. Joe, for the first time in quite some time, and obviously we do this weekly Bengals film review every single week. That was redundant, but it's true. For the first time in quite some time, we're talking about a Bengals victory, and yet I think a lot of Bengals fans after the win were like, eh, I don't know if that was good or bad, but the Bengals got a win. What were just some initial general thoughts on what you saw on film when you went back and watched the Bengals in their first victory in 2 months?
Well, the initial feeling after the game was very similar to what you said. I felt the same way of, should this team win? Because very quickly, you know, as it went into the following games, they were eliminated from playoff contention, so it made it official. So what was the win really worth? The Raiders, one of the worst teams in the league, looked like it on Sunday. The Bengals really did what they wanted to, and if they had any semblance of a passing game for most of that contest, it probably would have been a complete blowout. So I felt similar, like, eh, what was that? You know, and here we are, probably losing Tyler Boyd at the same time. That was a run-of-the-mill, end-of-the-season Marvin Lewis victory that really doesn't mean much and really doesn't, I don't know if it gives hope towards following seasons. But so you watch the film and you want to look at Jeff Driskel and see if he's making progress, and you want to see, well, how did Sam Hubbard and Geno Atkins do? And I wrote about them. Hopefully that'll be published today or tomorrow. And the defense looked good, again, for really the most part of maybe second half of the Browns game and to the Raiders game. They've been pretty good in 2 weeks in a row now against the Chargers. And Raiders aren't great, but they've been decent and on offense. And Derek Carr's been okay. And they held them to really nothing and really a couple drives here and there, and that was it. And they got a lot of pressure. You couldn't complete a pass on either Drake Kirkpatrick or William Jackson. I think that's what this defense is and what we expected. So that was good to see. On the other hand, Driskel on offense was terrible. He was horrendous. This is the worst Bengals quarterback performance I've seen since that Thursday night football against the Browns, where Andy Dalton had a 2 rating. What was
2014.
That?
Yeah, it was 2014. Yeah. I was at that game. He was the worst quarterback performance I've ever seen.
Right.
And it was so bad.
Next was this one. And here we are in a win where they scored 30 points. But, man, there was just so many forced errors by Driskel, and it wasn't that the Raiders were doing anything crazy. They played good coverage. They were holding a lot and they were pressing a lot, and I'm talking they were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 yards downfield and still grabbing John Ross and grabbing the other receivers, and I think it messed them up a little bit. But at the same time, the refs weren't throwing it, and the Raiders weren't doing anything crazy, so they weren't switching coverages post-snap and pre-snap. So I don't know what Driskel was looking at, but he forced a lot of throws in the coverage that really didn't have to be there, while other guys had one-on-one shots throughout the field. And you know, and you look at it, and that's not what we're used to from the Bengals. At 90% of the time, you can expect Andy Dalton to make the correct read and get it to the right guy, even if the offense is limited or even if he can be confused by a defense at times. Most of the time, you expect him to do the right thing. So this is a stark contrast watching Driskel struggle through readings and getting the ball to the right guy. And then losing Tyler Boyd really hurt, obviously, and it will, and it's probably going to continue for the final 2 weeks, and we'll see how that transitions. But for 2 weeks in a row, again, on offense, they're running the ball and able to run it and feeding Joe Mixon. And when they do that, it's nice and it's good and it's fun because he is fun, and it's nice to see the good young players get the ball consistently in ways that they can succeed and let them carry this team. And so if we're not watching wins and losses, at least we're watching a young budding star that could probably carry this franchise for the next few years. And that's cool.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Joe Goodberry of The Athletic is with us. Here's the thing that bothers me about that, Joe. And I don't like to be negative or crush the Bengals all the time. I promise I don't. But the fact that it took over a year and a half, multiple injuries, two offensive coordinators, your quarterback going down, your best player going down, all of this stuff to happen, to put a player like Joe Mixon in this position where he's getting 30 touches a game, 25 plus carries. And I know there's offensive line issues, but to me, it's crazy it took this long. This team, this organization was as high, including the coaching staff, as high on Mixon as any player. I think they would have taken him. Without the off the field, he might have been the ninth overall pick. They love.
We made that argument, remember?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So to me, it boggles my mind that someone that they're all on board with, like coaching staff, front office, for everywhere you look in that organization, they love Joe Mixon and think he has potential. And yet it's taken over 18 months to really put him in a position to succeed and give him the reps that he deserves and that he's shown and that he's earned, and they're finally doing it. And it's just like, well, why the hell didn't you do this when things were going off the rails 2 months ago?
Yeah, and it's funny because there's a lot of games where we walk away and we come back and we say, they just didn't stick to the run, and they just didn't feed Joe Mixon. And there were a lot of games. We said this a lot when they were winning and they were struggling at some point in the game, whether that was the second, third, fourth quarter, and the passing game was faltering or needed a spark. Next thing you know, Joe Mixon carries this team on a drive for a touchdown or in the field position for a field goal. And we would say, man, you see that? Look how they lean on him then when they need it. And I thought, this is exactly what you should do. I mean, he is a focal point of this offense, but your running game isn't going to carry any of these teams that we're watching. They're not going to carry you to the playoffs or deep into the playoffs. It's going to be the passing game and the quarterback. But when your quarterback is struggling or when your passing offense is missing key players, as this team has, they should have turned to Mixon way earlier and gotten to him. Now, he did get hurt a little bit, so maybe they were weary to jump back on him so quickly. And the offensive line, like you mentioned, makes it hard a lot of times because it's an inconsistent running game. Even if he averages 4.5 yards per carry, I bet you it's 8 yards and then 0 yards on a lot of those back-to-back runs, because this offensive line is so volatile and one guy missing a block can kill it completely. And we saw that again even this week. But the last 2 weeks against the Chargers and the Raiders, and the running game being as dominant as it was, and the performances, both are winning performances, I think, on offense, where you could say, hey, if something goes better here or there against the Chargers, and they could have won that game. But leaning on Joe Mixon and watching those two games made me think, man, it's really just the passing aspect of his game that needs to be more tuned, and it's the pass blocking. And if you can do that, I think he becomes an MVP-type player in this league. I think he can be Todd Gurley or Le'Veon Bell or any one of those guys. And now, after the usage he's had the last 2 weeks, he's now the fifth most used running back in the league. So it's crazy that you look around, and that's the thing. I get a lot of comments, and you probably do too, James, of he needs to touch it 25 times a game, or he needs to touch it 30 times a game, I got the other day. And I'm like, well, that's really not realistic. The top guy in the league touches it 25 times a game in Zeke Elliott, and that's like extreme usage. That means they don't have anybody behind them that they trust at all. And Joe Mixon's at 20 touches per game, 20.6, I believe it is, and he's the fifth most used back in the NFL. So it's not about how many times they're giving him the ball at this point. I think it's the quality touches and the passing game usage really needs to move up. There, you know, he can be a guy that averages 9-10 yards per catch at running back, and like a Todd Gurley does. And earlier in the year, he was averaging 9.5 yards. It's really dropped down after like a 2-catch, 1-yard day this weekend. And you just can't have those. Not in today's NFL. He needs to be a focal point, and that's what I'm looking for. Hopefully, the final 2 weeks they showcase him that way, let him develop, giving more pass blocking reps so he can get better at that, so they can trust him more. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think he's a stud and should be the reason why you look at this team and saying the next 2 years, it could be really good if they build it the right way.
Joe Goodberry of The Athletic is with us. Joe, you tweeted something out during the game that I thought was interesting, and it was in reference to Joe Mixon. You said that a lot of evaluators before the draft compared him to Le'Veon Bell. And I remember talking to you before the draft, and you said that he had shown those flashes that he could be Le'Veon Bell, but now in the NFL, he resembles Todd Gurley, that his game has changed a little bit. What's different? Not that that's not great company to be in, Gurley and Le'Veon Bell. It's great to be mentioned with either of those guys, but what's different from his Oklahoma days to now? And is that a compliment? Is that how the Bengals are using him, et cetera, when you pop on the film?
First thing is the comparison between those two guys, Le'Veon Bell versus Todd Gurley, maybe the two best backs in the league, or at least the elite upper echelon guys when Bell's playing, right? So the difference between those guys are they're both great receiving threats. I think Le'Veon Bell's a better route runner, but I think both guys have tremendous hands and run after the catcher up there with anybody. And then the difference for them, biggest difference, is how they get to the line of scrimmage. So you, as a running back, you have basically pre-line of scrimmage, post-line of scrimmage abilities. And for me, Le'Veon Bell is patient. His vision's really good. He anticipates. He moves linebackers out of the hole. And he can be that way because the Steelers' offensive line is tremendous. It's one of the best and maybe the best run-blocking line in the league. So he's afforded that extra time and patience to find the right hole and to make someone miss once he gets through it. Gurley is more of, and he's got a good offensive line and a good scheme around him, but he's more of a hit the hole, burst through it, and then make someone miss, or hit the hole, burst through it, run someone over. And looking at Joe Mixon at Oklahoma, he showed a lot of what Le'Veon Bell did, and he ran out of the shotgun a ton there, and he was able to be patient, pick his poison, and figure out which hole is best for him and hit it at full speed. We see the type of athlete he is for a guy his size. When he can get up to top speed pretty quickly, and his agility is impressive for a running back like that. He resembled Le'Veon Bell. They would put him in the slot. They'd put him out wide. He'd run routes. He'd catch with his hands. To me, I thought him and Christian McCaffrey were the two best receiving backs in that draft. And you see the way McCaffrey's used. You see the way Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara from that draft are being used. And you say, well, you know, Mixon should be with those guys. He should be used exactly the same way and have that type of production in the receiving game. But he's not. He's used more like Gurley. Even though Gurley has a lot of receptions, a lot of yards and touchdowns as a receiver, his are more of play action or getting him out while the rest of the they'll send like drag routes all to the left, and they'll leak out Todd Gurley to the right and hit him on a check down and let him run. And the way they're using Joe Mixon with the Bengals is hit the line, hit it hard, and then lift your eyes and head up, and then look for a space to run or make that safety miss. And I think that makes sense for this offensive line because it's struggling and because it's really, you know, even when they're playing good, is not a great line. So that's why I tweeted that a lot of it can be usage and a lot of it can be talent around you. I still think Mixon could be that patient runner and be that guy that can do the things Le'Veon Bell does. And I think he can still do that as a receiver, run routes the way Le'Veon Bell did. But the Bengals aren't using him that way, maybe because they can't afford it, but maybe because there's some part of they don't know how to use their guys. I think we've seen for a long time. So yeah, I think even if he continued down the same path, and I was comparing Gurley's stats his first 2 years to Joe Mixon's stats the first 2 years, they're very similar. It'll be interesting these final two games play out. I really want to compare them then because Le'Veon Bell had a breakout year too. I mean, really, really crazy year. But Todd Gurley was under Jeff Fisher with the Rams, and he struggled, or he didn't have the same type of high-end production, especially in the passing game. It was really lacking, and he was averaging about 8 yards per catch as a receiver. Now with the Rams, they're averaging like 10.5 yards per catch, and for me, I look at the similarities between that situation and Joe Mixon's with Marvin Lewis, and I think of, well, if they get the right guy in here that can take full advantage of it, we could see the same type of explosion.
Look at you selling hope that Marvin isn't going to be back. You know Marvin Lewis is coaching for his job on Sunday, right? Like, if they win, that dude's coming back.
I don't have anything to say about this anymore. You know, he's coaching for his job. He's playing the Steelers.
I don't know that for sure, but, man, if they beat Cleveland, we'll get into that later. I want to continue to talk about Sunday. I don't want to bring down the mood. Everyone's feeling good about Joe Mixon, and rightfully so. This will bring down the mood a little bit, but Jeff Driscoll, 14 of 33, was awful. Obviously, the worst performance he's had as a starter. Let's go in depth a little bit. When you watched him, what stood out? Was it confusion? You said it wasn't really what the Raiders were doing. What stood out, and why was Driscoll so off?
You know what? He's turning into Andy Dalton, but he's not that kind of guy. What I mean is they want the ball to come out quick. They want it to come out concise. They want it to come out confidently. Even when Andy Dalton throws in the coverage, he throws it like he knows where the hell he's throwing the ball. You know what I mean? Like, they want that ball out in 2 to 2.5 seconds, and that's it. And this offense is going to keep rolling. Driscoll is an a phrase we use a lot of times in player evaluation, you see from like draft Twitter scouting guys, they will say this quarterback is really good outside of the structure of the offense, or this guy is really good inside of it, a Jared Goff, an Andy Dalton. But once the play breaks down and you have to make something happen afterwards, that's when Patrick Mahomes and Tony Romo and Big Ben look as good as they do. Driscoll looked better when he's under pressure. He's looked better when things have broken down. When things need to be inside of the system and he needs to be on time and make the correct read and make the correct throw and live with it and die with it, he's looked much worse. And I think the longer it goes, the more practice reps he gets, the more time he has coaches in his ear, he's turning more into Andy Dalton without having that same DNA in him. And that's kind of speculation, but it just feels that way when I watch him. And from what he was when he came in cold off the bench and just rifling the ball down the middle of the field and taking chances and forcing the ball and holding on to it a little longer. We talked about the first few weeks there. He's holding on a little too long. He's a little too slow in his progressions. He's a little too slow in everything. But now he's getting sped up a little bit, and it's almost too fast. He needs to find that balance there. And I think a lot of times when I was watching on tape this past week, he was dropping back and just throwing it to the guy he believed was supposed to be the right guy. And a lot of times, to me, it looked like it wasn't, just based on what we've seen Andy Dalton run this offense for a long time. You think of the first play I can think of is the deep shot to John Ross, where John Ross goes up, makes a catch, but he's out of bounds. And that was quarters coverage, and middle of the field should be open with safety split. You got off coverage, so it shouldn't have gone to John Ross in that situation. He's got safety help. He's got off coverage. He's got the advantage there against a vertical route. And what he has instead is CJ Uzama running a post up the middle, splitting both the safeties, getting behind the linebackers. That should be the throw. And he's been really good throwing over the middle in the intermediate range. I'm surprised he didn't look there and give it to him. And then there was a few more plays that were exactly similar to that, where the safeties are split or you got a single high safety. And yet there was one, Alex Erickson's running a post over the middle. You got a single high safety, so the middle of the field should be closed. You should not be throwing this post to Erickson. And he throws it anyways, and there's four guys around him that converge very quickly, and the pass goes incomplete. But there's a lot of plays where you look at it and you go, and we were watching on Sunday, you go, man, he's throwing right in the coverage, or he's throwing high every time. And it's lucky he was throwing high a lot, because it could have been a 3 or 4 interception type performance, but he missed a lot of them. And you look at it and you say, well, maybe that was just one game, and maybe he's still, you know, working through what they're teaching him and what they're showing him and as he's getting experience. But it was a scary game to think of what his potential is. I think I said last week, I think he's going to play a long time in this league based on what he showed those first three games or 2.5 games of being able to get the ball out, make some plays, and trust his receivers. And then after that last performance, I thought, well, if he continues this way, he may not be the backup next year.
Yeah, you're right. It's been crazy to see. And honestly, though, it comes down to coaching. You just said it. They're two totally different style quarterbacks. And so to me, I think that matters a lot. And that'll be a theme of what we talk about next. He's Joe Goodberry of The Athletic. I'm James Erpine, and this is the Locked On Bengals podcast. Tyler Boyd is out. What does it mean for the rest of the Bengals wide receivers? We'll dive into that next on the Locked On Bengals podcast. Joe Tyler Boyd reportedly out, and I expect him to miss the final 2 weeks. He has a sprained MCL, and even though he might be able to play with a brace or something like that, there's literally no reason to play him. So on Monday's show, I pretty much said, hey, they shouldn't play him. You would agree with that, correct?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yep, set him, just let him heal. That's fine. He got over his 1,000 yards, so it's perfect. In a sense, obviously no injury is perfect, but at least it's nothing serious. He can go into the offseason relatively healthy if he sits the next couple of weeks. That said, now AJ Green's out. Obviously, the tight end room has been demolished by injuries and ravaged. The Cleveland Browns, it's no secret what they're going to do against Joe Mixon. They're going to put 8 in the box and make someone else beat him. And to me, if I'm the Bengals coaching staff, and I would have had this conversation on Monday, I would have went to number 15, John Ross, and I would have said, look, I don't know, you know what you think, and if, this is if I'm Marvin or wide receivers coach Bob Bicknell or offensive coordinator Bill Lazor, all brought him into a room and said, hey, look, this is your time now. We believe in you. We're going to give you 10 to 12 targets. We're going to get you the ball in space. We're going to use you the same way they used you at Washington. We're going to get you slants. We're going to get you screens. We're going to send you deep still. But we're going to move you all around and really try to feature you these final two games. Let's get it going. We believe in you. Let's do it. And really try to do that. And the reason why, more than anything, is to give him some confidence. Obviously, the Bengals are eliminated, but give him some confidence going into next year. The Tyler Boyd blueprint worked last year. He had two big games to end the year, and what happened? Well, then this year he comes back, and he's dominant, and he's a really, really good player and slot wide receiver for this team. So to me, I would want the same blueprint. I would want to try to follow at least the same blueprint for John Ross. And I think that can be done. And then the idea long-term of having AJ Green healthy next year, Tyler Boyd, who knows he's the man, and then John Ross goes into the offseason feeling like he's the man. Now you have that three-headed monster. Is there any chance, based on what you've seen, that the Bengals could do this and use this, or use Ross wisely and put him in a position for success this Sunday against the Browns and then next Sunday in the season finale against the Steelers?
Yeah, I do think there's precedence for it. And not just because they should, because he was the number nine overall pick, and because they should believe in him and they should want him to succeed, even though I don't know that that's all true or that they all feel that way. But in past years, they've done this. And remember, Tyler Boyd is the blueprint. And he was in the doghouse a lot last year. There was a lot of games he wasn't playing at all. I think he played 198 snaps last year before week 16 and 17, so the final two games. He played just average 200 snaps throughout that entire year. And then the final two games, he played 109 snaps. He saw 13 targets, caught 10 balls, 130 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, that last big play, that big touchdown against the Ravens to beat them, was huge. And that's not the only time they've done this, especially at receiver. They did it with Cody Core as a rookie in 2016. That was also the year that A.J. Green was out for the rest of the year. Tyler Boyd was a rookie. They had Brandon LaFell. Cody Core in that final 2 weeks played 100 snaps, saw 19 targets in those two games. Now, he wasn't very efficient, but they fed him the ball. I mean, we would love to see that now. 19 targets. Give John Ross 19 targets over the next 2 weeks. I'm going to be excited. Give those to Auden Tate, Josh Malone, even maybe Cody Core gets them again. But, right, that would be, to me, I could see a situation where Erickson's in the slot, and they've been way better in the slot this year. I don't have the numbers right in front of me right now, but in comparison to throwing in the slot to throwing on the outside this year is like 71% completions to 63% completions. The touchdown rate's up. The yards per catch rate is up. Everything in the slot for this offense has been much better. So for me, I look at it and say, well, it could be Erickson that ends up getting these targets and balls out and plays well. On the other hand, I think you move John Ross in the slot, and I think you use him, and I think you find ways to get him the ball. You look around the league, number one receivers are playing in the slot all the time. This is what you do. You get them in there to get that coverage away from them. And statistically, there's less coverage. There's less throwing into tight windows. There's less contested grabs in the slot, and that sounds good for John Ross right now. And you can create more things for him. You can move him around. You can do things for him. And it's not just him, because I want to see Christian Westerman play. I want to see Malik Jefferson play. He just went on IR also for I don't even know what. I don't even think they announced it unless you know, James. But he played on special teams, played one snap on defense, pass rushing in a 3-3-5 nickel, same as he did the week before. Man, I really thought this was the time. They did it with Nick Vigil at this time in 2016. They were 5-8-1 at this time. The final 2 weeks he played, they got to see what he could do. And he ended up starting the following year. So Jefferson's out of the picture. But, you know, I would love to see a situation where they rotate Westerman with Alex Redman at right guard. You try and give Westerman snaps maybe at left guard, even though Clint Bowling's there. Maybe you move Clint Bowling to right tackle. Marvin's comments yesterday during the press conference was more of, we don't want to mix things around because these offensive linemen need reps together. But at the same time, this is a losing season. This is when you need to find out, do we need to invest in a guard next year? Do we need to invest in a tackle next year? Because you can't go in thinking Alex Redmond's going to be your guy, and the way they're treating him, like, oh, we can't take Redmond out for Westerman, is crazy to me because he hasn't played well, and he's had penalties, and the penalties have been killer in a lot of drives and a lot of games. So for me to think that one guy's untouchable while the other guy can't get on the field is scary for the final 2 weeks. Now, last year they did do it, though. They rotated Westerman and Redmond at left guard, and they found out that they may have a starter in Redmond, and that's fine. That's what I want to see. That's what you want to see these final 2 weeks, and hopefully they do this more at even if it's at linebacker, but I'd like to see Darius Phillips. I'd like to see Devontae Harris at corner get in. I'd like like to see some punt returns by different guys, even though Alex Erickson's having a pretty good year. I'd like to see Phillips. He was drafted. A lot of his appeal was his return game. I'd like to see Giovanni Bernard get a punt return. You know, it's a veteran guy who's going to have less than 100 touches this year for the first time in his career. He's not being used. You have to wonder if Mixon's going to be a 25-touch kind of guy. Where's the room for Bernard? Where can he still help this team? Is he still a valuable member of this team? You know, I still believe he's very good and can help a lot of teams in this league. Maybe that's that punt returner, and he did a lot of that in college. I think he averaged 16 yards per punt return his final year at North Carolina. So I'd like to see him get those opportunities. There's a lot of things and a lot of answers and to questions you could probably find in these final two games, the way they did last year and the way they did the year before, third year in a row of having a losing season.
Yeah, so a couple things here. Catherine Terrell of ESPN just tweeted out that John Ross doesn't have his helmet today at practice. I don't know what that means. It could just mean, you know, nothing serious. He's just not practicing. Tyler Boyd not at practice either, and we don't expect him to play. I'm with you. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with this whole formula, and everything you said makes sense, right? You're eliminated. You're 6-8. If you win, great. If you don't, fine. But you have a head coach that, again, is probably looking at things like, all right, I'm coaching for my job. I don't want to roll the dice. I don't need a fumble on this punt return when I know Alex Erickson can do the job, and it could be a reason why we win. You know, so like that to me is the biggest problem here is – you have a coach who's probably going to fight and try to keep his gig for one more year. I could totally see that happening given where this roster is from a health standpoint. And it's almost like, all right, let's see the young guys. But at the same time, they're trying to win and get to 7 wins. Because I really do. I think if you win one of these next two, that might be enough to bring Marvin back. Here's this is where Mike Brown comes in. Maybe Mike Brown has the conversation with Marvin. Hey, we need to see these young guys. So play them. My thoughts on your future aren't going to change in these final 2 weeks, even though they did last year. Nothing can be changed. Either I'm bringing you back or I'm not. So just so you know. So I guess that's the only way to kind of prevent that from happening, because otherwise it's Marvin Lewis essentially coaching for his job. And I still feel like that's what he's doing. And if he can win one of these next two, they would have, over the past month, played against what might be the best team in the AFC on the road and lost by 5 and really held their own. The defense would have played better over the past 2 weeks if that continues over the final 2 weeks of the season and they finished 2-2. I could totally see Mike saying, yeah, Marvin's our guy. We're bringing him back next year. So that's the one thing, the one roadblock, I think, that could prevent that, where they do play the young guys, they do get creative, and they do put all of these players in different positions that they've succeeded before, whether in college or in other places, and see what they can do for the Bengals.
And that's why I made the comment that a real GM or for a real franchise would say and make that same comment you made, that of, listen, whether it's a rebuilding year on a new coach, and you'd say, you know, this isn't going to affect my evaluation of you, I know what you can do, play these young guys. We need to find out if we need to spend a mid-round pick at receiver. So we need to find out if Josh Malone or Auden Tate can play. We need to know if we need to draft an offensive lineman, because we need to find out if any of these other 5 guys on the roster can be the best 5 on the team and start next year. So I think that's what would take place. With the Bengals not really having that and kind of having – it feels like almost, even though Mike Brown is still the owner, still the guy, still listed as the GM, there is an opportunity for where it's almost like 3 different people struggling for the power there, Mike Brown and Duke Tobin and Marvin Lewis, of, you know, not the uncertainty of, is he going to be here? Is he not? If he wants to be here, he will be here, under what Josina Anderson's report was a few weeks ago. And how do I say, you have to play this guy, Marvin? You know, I don't feel like all the time that is the case. I feel like if you're watching the Cowboys and talking about the Cowboys, Jerry Jones is going to say, hey, you need to play that player. And I don't know if Mike Brown does that as much. I feel like he leaves those decisions up to Marvin. And like you said, if Marvin's playing for his job or feels like he's playing for his job, he's going to play the safe guys or the guys he trusts. And I think the greatest, like, example is Redmond versus Westerman, because Redmond is a guy that they love because he's there early. He's there in the off season training. He lost a lot of weight. He got stronger. He's the mentality they want, the character they want. He's the kind of guy where they say, look, undrafted guy, you bust your ass for us, you do what we say, you will get a starting job and you will play. And then the other guy is Westerman, as the reports are, you know, he doesn't really get it all the time, or he's got a lot of mistakes in practice or on the board, or when they're asking him questions and they can't really trust what he does all the time, and doesn't really correct the mistakes that they ask him to do. And instead, one guy looks really good on tape, the other guy looks okay for most of the time, but he... the penalties, and Alex Redmond, I'm talking. So for them, they see one guy as a wild card, and it's hard to reward the guy that doesn't make the corrections you ask him to and give him playing time over the guy who does everything you say, has the right attitude, has the right mindset, and it's almost like they're okay playing the worst player to send the right message. When I think in a situation like this, is you got to play the guy that you feel may be the guy on your roster in 2 years, the guy that you're going to make a decision in 2 years of who makes us better. And in my opinion, that is worth exploring on which one of these, and I'm not just talking about offensive linemen here, which one of these young guys are better than the next.
It's totally worth exploring, and that's what they should do. Again, I doubt they do it. And you know what's crazy? I think the Tyler Boyd injury is really significant, because I was feeling... and I still do, and I told Jeff Lloyd this of Locked On Browns yesterday. I felt good about the Bengals going into this game. Like, I think with Boyd, they would have had more than a puncher's chance of winning, which is not something anyone here in Cleveland would say. But just knowing Marvin, I think that the Bengals are going to show up. I do. I think he will keep the guys engaged. They're going to show up. They're going to play hard. And you mix Boyd in with Ross and Mixon, and the way the offense has played with those two guys kind of being the focal point in Mixon and Boyd, and then the defense, the way it's playing, I might have, and I can't do it now, but I might have picked the Bengals to win this game on Sunday. Without Boyd, I can't do that. But I was close to doing it. And last I saw, they were like 7 or 8, maybe even 9. It got the 9, I heard, point underdogs to the Browns, which is just, it's crazy to me that it's that one-sided. But yeah, I was close to picking the Bengals. I can't now with Boyd down. But what do you think about that, the idea that the Bengals will not only compete compared to the way they were down, I believe it was 28-0 when the first time these two matched up, right, not only compete, but if they had Boyd, be able to potentially win on Sunday?
Yeah, I feel very similarly. And it's mostly because I feel much worse with Boyd out there because of what they showed last week in that second half in the no semblance of a passing game. They tried a few times to really, all right, let's get one more touchdown. Let's move it and let's end this game while we can by throwing the ball downfield. And it was horrific last week. And, you know, they had to lead the mix in and it worked. Now, I think the Browns defense is better than the Raiders. I think the Browns, what they showed last time these two teams matched up, is scary, because this is a team that's ascending, playing confidently, has a spark and a lit under them, maybe from the new coach, maybe from the quarterback, maybe because of both, and because those two things do that. And they're just playing much better than the Bengals have. And with Boyd, with the progress the Bengals, I think, have kind of showed against the Chargers and the Raiders, even though the Raiders are a bad team, we're talking about the Browns. You can still beat them. The way the Browns talked shit last time, the way they celebrated, the way they said they're going to beat them before the game, I think stung the Bengals a little bit. And the way the Bengals played, I think they were upset about it. And I definitely, they probably looked at this game of, we're going to go out there and we're going to end the season for the Browns if it wasn't ended by the time they got there. So I think they were going to play hard, and I think they may still, but I just think the passing game, if it's anything like it was last week after losing Boyd, is the worst passing offense in the league. So that's not going to give you much, and you can't win in this league without it.
He's Joe Goodberry of The Athletic. You could follow him on Twitter at Joe Goodberry. Joe, before I let you go, in the defense, it really seems to, God, I don't want to say turned a corner, because they're obviously very flawed. They need linebacker help especially. But I do think they've been better in recent weeks, especially when you look, and part of it's because they were playing the Raiders, but I think part of it, that second half against the Chargers, they were really good. What is Marvin Lewis doing different, if anything, and why has this defense seemed to have turned a corner at least over the past week and a half?
It's not that they're doing a lot differently. They are going more to the middle linebackers in the A-gaps, which is, if you remember from under Mike Zimmer's days, And that helps the pass rush. And they did that a bunch last week. And, I mean, Geno Atkins got a couple one-on-ones, and he took advantage of them because Nick Vigil's lined up in the A-gap. And all it does is make the center account for him. And then, you know, it gives Atkins that split second to go one-on-one with the left guard that was a backup player, and he took advantage. So little things like that matter and help your stars. But we've said every single week, too, that if the offense was scoring points, this defense would look better, and they have. And it, you know, whenever a game is neutral or you're leading for the offense, in which they haven't been over the last 8-9 weeks, the pass rush is going to look much better. And I think Atkins, Dunlap, and Hubbard have combined now for 24 sacks. 17 of them are when the game is tied or when the Bengals are leading. And so it really, for this last 2 months where they've been getting beaten, we've been wondering, where are those guys? And it's because it's hard to tee off when you're down already and down big, like they were in a lot of games. So that helps. Obviously, that helps. But at the same time, I think part of it is figuring out where guys go. Sam Hubbard was playing defensive tackle a lot of the year after they lost Carl Lawson, after they started to lose some defensive tackles. And then Hubbard looked much worse at defensive tackle the last 2 weeks. It might be the last 3 weeks. He's only played 2 snaps now at D tackle, and he's playing all the snaps on the edge. And he has 7 pressures and 3 sacks in these last 3 weeks. And so they're starting to figure out, okay, this is what you do better. Even though we thought you might be an interior rusher, I did too. I thought before the draft and after, I thought that's where he may end up, and he may still as he gets older. But right now he's better on the edge, so they're getting a little spark there, and that helps. I think the corners are playing fantastic. I think William Jackson is right back to where we were, where we thought he was. He's given up like 10 yards per catch, or 10 yards total over the course of the last 7 weeks. Drake Kirkpatrick has been really good. Darquez Denard has been all right. And, you know, Sean Williams had a fantastic game last week. So the defense really is looking at it. You really look and you step back and you look at next year and you say, it's linebacker completely. They need a middle linebacker. And even this past week, where I think Vigil has gotten better as he's gotten back from injury, and it's really a two-linebacker defense and a two-linebacker league, that other guy has been such a hole, whether that's Jordan Evans, whether that's Vincent Ray, whether that's Hardy Nickerson, who's gotten the bulk of the snaps, but everyone else has gotten in there. What they've done is they've actually put Brandon Wilson in there at linebacker. And if you look, the Bengals are playing a dime defense for the first time in a long time. I haven't remembered the Bengals playing a dime defense since Chris Crocker was doubling as a linebacker / safety, Chinnunu and Dukwe doing the same thing. And now they've got Brandon Wilson actually out there. And to me, that's interesting because it was Clayton Fedgelum at the beginning of the year. Now it's Wilson. So they feel he's a better cover guy than Fedgelum is in a man coverage situation. So they're out there with one linebacker really taking Nickerson off the field. And I think that makes sense. So small little tweaks like this that probably should have happened all year. And you know what? They did make tweaks all year. It just didn't work. And they ran into a buzzsaw that was the high-powered Saints and the Chiefs. And, you know, they came out of that on the other side and they fired their coordinator. So, you know, they've gotten better, and I still think they're a linebacker away from having a really, really good defense.
Yeah, which, you know, they could have helped their cause to get a really, really good linebacker if they had lost last week. He's Joe Goodberry of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at Joe Goodberry. Joe, what do you got coming up, and what do you have up right now at The Athletic?
It should be posted either today or tomorrow. I don't control that, but I'm going to look at Geno Atkins and Sam Hubbard and their plays. They had a lot of them against the run. Pro Football Focus gave them 90-plus grades for both of them, which is elite category. Both of them, tremendous, tremendous days. Really exciting for Hubbard, because if the Bengals get Carl Lawson back next year at full strength, I mean, we're talking about a really good defensive line at that point that's young. And I still want to see Jordan Willis in year three and see if he takes that next step. And then if you get Ryan Glasgow back, man, that is a young, very, very good nucleus on the defensive line. And what we've seen, we're still in the prime years of Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap. So even if that's only another year or two or whatever for those guys, that is still probably the strength of this team at this point going into next year. So I was really happy with Hubbard. I was really happy to get Atkins. First 3-sack game, he gets his Pro Bowl, 7th Pro Bowl. That puts him in Hall of Fame discussion at the very least. Even if his career ended at, you know, short, it would be he'd be in that category already. So there's a lot to talk about with those two, and their performance obviously started that off.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I hope, and you're right, Geno Atkins, 7th Pro Bowl. I hope he can get to 10.
Me too.
How great would that be? I think Anthony Munoz, did he have 11?
11, yes.
11. So if he could threaten that Bengals record, that would be really
cool. Warren Sapp had 7. John Randall had 7. Kennedy had 8. So it's defensive tackle. 7 is – he's there. I mean, he gets 8 or 9. He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Which would be great to see. Obviously, the Bengals only have 1 Hall of Famer in Anthony Munoz. He's Joe Goodberry of The Athletic. Good stuff from Joe, as always. That's going to do it for today's podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever you get your podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter at Joe Goodberry, at James Erpine, and at Locked On Bengals. Until next time, I'm James Erpine. Back at it tomorrow with a prediction for Sunday, injury updates, and more right here on the Locked On Bengals podcast.